Football on Off the Ball.
Brought to you by the Boyle Sports app. Cash out and in-play betting available in the App Store and Google Play Store.
All right, you're very welcome back to Thursday's Off the Ball. It's 7:30. Delighted to have John Giles once again in studio with us. How are you keeping?
Good, Nathan.
So we're a week in. You enjoying the World Cup?
Yeah, it's well, it's hectic at this time, isn't it? Mm. You know, the first week, there's three matches a day. And to be quite honest, if you asked me who was playing yesterday, I'd have to look it up.
Yeah, it feels like it's only starting. Yeah, there's four teams already out.
Yeah, but it's been good, I think, in terms of, I mean, most of the teams, I mean, we've seen other tournaments before where most of the teams are backing up and playing defensively in that. That hasn't happened, you know, and like the what we regard as the smaller countries have been very good. You know, they've had a go. Morocco, Iran, I'm just reading them off now. Iceland, as we know, a couple of shots. Mexico against Germany have been really good. So I think it has the makings of a really good tournament. Because obviously when we get through another week of it, then we'll have a really good look at it, Nathan. But so far, I think it's been very, very promising. For some of the big teams have been a little bit disappointing. Germany particularly.
Argentina, one of those that there were obviously a lot of questions over after the 1-1 draw with Iceland last weekend. They're currently playing against Croatia. I know you've been watching the first 25 minutes, half an hour. Any improvement from the weekend?
It's very tight, this match. Very, very tight. There haven't been any chances. A lot of midfield play. Messi, of course. Messi hasn't been on the ball enough, as you would expect him to. Aguero hasn't been much. There's been very, very tight, Nathan. So it'd be very, very hard to call that match. You know, unless it dies down a little bit and there's more space. And there's no team. Both teams are actually playing quite well, I think, because they're not allowing the other team to play. So it's going to take a touch of genius from somebody to really get in front in this particular match.
What does Messi do? What do you expect Messi to do in a game like this where it is so tight, where there's not a lot of space, where there is huge expectation and huge pressure? Is that where experience comes in, that you're just patient, you wait for your moment?
Well, you can only do what you can do, Nathan. You know, you don't have any preconceived ideas about, well, this is the way I'm going to play, because you don't know how it's going to work out. Actually, go back to last week. I thought Messi was really, really good in the match that Argentina played. Now, he got a lot of stick, and very unfairly, because I'm just getting off the subject a little bit. Ronaldo scored a penalty and he didn't score a penalty. Then Ronaldo was the better player. No, this is like in one day. But there's only a certain amount of things in the game for a player, even of Messi's class. And it was very, very tight. He didn't have, they were too crowded in the match. Di Maria was coming in from the wing and he was down the middle of the pitch. He was more or less playing as an advanced midfield player. But everything he did well. In the context of what he had to do. In other words, Messi doesn't try to do things that are not on. Like if it's a simple pass, he played a simple pass. And I don't think he thinks, well, I've got to do something here to change the game. You know, the game changes in itself, and I think he's very, very good, very disciplined in what he did. Same tonight, he hasn't been on the ball much. But anything he does in any particular situation, in my opinion, was the right thing to do. So, And again, if he gets a chance to use his genius, he will do that. But at the right time, this is difficult matches for Messi. A lot expected of him, and there's nothing really happening. So you've got to, he is, and I'm sure he will, keep his discipline until the moment arrives that he can produce what he can produce.
Yeah, that's what I was wondering. So if he is continuing what he does at club level and doing the right thing at the right time.
Yeah.
Does there come a moment where you just need to take a risk, though? You need to think, actually, maybe I do need to do this myself.
I think what happens with the likes of Messi, who is a genius of a player, in my opinion, he'll react to that at the right time, Edin. He won't say, well, when the ball comes to me next time, this is what I have to do. If it's not on, he'll do, if it takes 90 minutes of doing what he's doing, and it's either the right thing to do or it's the wrong thing to do, regardless of the score. And as we know with Messi will go past people when he gets a chance to do it. But the match that I've seen last week and tonight, there's nothing in it for him that he can make it happen. I think he will make it happen if it's on to happen. I mean, that's the genius of all these players like Messi. You know, they don't go out of their way to do it. They just do it as it's on. And he won't be thinking, well, the match is tight. When I get the ball next time, I have to meet five or six players. No, he won't do that. You have to keep his patience, because what will happen if he does that, then he'll give the ball away and you're even worse off.
Yeah.
So it's very delicate in a match like that to say, this is what's in it for me. not to go chasing something that's not on. I mean, that's what makes him and him and others the great players.
Is that where ultimately the quality of the team and the quality of the management will let him down then? Because if you're watching Messi dropping deep and there's two players, not man-marking him, but pretty close to him all the time, there has to be space somewhere else that somebody can take advantage of.
Well, that's when you need the great players around you. Mm. You know, like the better the players you play with, the better you're going to be. Because the players, if they're really good, will make a position for Messi that when he receives the ball, he has time and space to do it. You know, Argentina haven't been able to do that either last week or the first half hour that I watched tonight. They haven't been able to do that. So he can only do what he can do in any given situation. Like in Ronaldo's situation, it can be different because Ronaldo's not bothered about getting in the general play. He's just not bothered about it. Ronaldo comes alive when there's a goal scoring opportunity. I mean, I saw him today and there were certain things happening and he wasn't bothered. You know, like I say, you should be running back there, you should be doing that. Well, I know now that it's no good me thinking that because he'll save himself for a goal. Then he becomes a genius. But in the general play, if it's tight, he definitely needs other people to present a thing for him, more so than Messi does. Messi will come deep and he'll get on the ball. But there's only so much he can do. And I think, I don't think Argentina are a good team, to be quite honest, Nathan. So he needs players to be making space for him rather than him having to make space for all the people all the time.
Could Messi take a leaf out of Ronaldo's book then and actually be more selfish in how he plays, that not be in that advanced midfield position, just be an almost out-and-out striker and save himself and be in positions where he can be a match winner?
No, I think Messi is what he is. You know, Messi is Messi because he doesn't do that. I mean, again, if I would say take a choice between Ronaldo and Messi, I'd go for Messi all the time. But that's my personal choice because he's involved in the game all the time. Now, I'm not taking anything. Ronaldo was brilliant when it comes to goal scoring numbers. He's a genius. But Messi scores a lot of goals as well, almost as many as Ronaldo does. But he contributes more to the team, in my opinion, all the time. You know, I think, to be honest, if I had Ronaldo in the Argentinian team at the moment, where they're not creating anything, he wouldn't contribute anything. Maybe from a set piece where he got a good header because he's such a good header of the ball. But now Messi can only do what he can do, and he can still come up with a bit of genius individually, as we know. Anyway, sometime in the game, he might get on the ball and go past three or four players.
Yeah.
If it's on to do, you know.
Do performances like Ronaldo's on Friday night in the 3-3 against Spain when he scored the hat-trick, do moments like that, did they change how you ultimately assess Ronaldo as a player in terms of how great he is?
I've had to reassess him in a big way from in the last 10 years. When I saw him playing for Manchester United, Nathan, I was, he's not running back, he's not doing this, he's not playing for the team, he's not doing that. Because I didn't know him. I've never seen a player like Ronaldo before to have the mentality to do what he does. In other words, Ronaldo in the first 15 minutes, or any 15 minute match, might not touch the ball. And he doesn't care. Ronaldo wants to be the star, right? He has to be the star. And the best way to be a star is to score goals.
Yeah.
And that's all he thinks of. I don't think he thinks about his mates. I don't think he says, well, I'm going to run back. He's going to continue. And he's done it on a regular basis. Now, when I first saw him playing at Manchester, which is, 10 or 12 years ago, actually, he scored goals, unbelievable goals, in that particular time. So he's obviously contributed in a big, big, big way to the team. You know, I don't think he cares about his mates or anything else. He's going to do it. But when a goal scored, watching Ronaldo, when a goal scored an opportunity arrives, he becomes a genius. Absolute genius. He takes up the right positions. He's determined to get it, whether it be a header or he can shoot with both feet. He becomes a genius. So the lads like in Real Madrid over the years will put up with him, right? Because he's going to score the goals. In Ronaldo's head, he doesn't care about his mates. He knows if he scores two goals, if he never touches the ball for the rest of the game, he's going to be the star. So he has to be the star. But he has the ability to do it. Now, I didn't realise that when I first saw him playing. I thought, no, he's lazy, he's not doing this, he's not doing that. But I've watched him over the years. And to be quite honest, I've never seen a player like him before that could go 15 minutes without touching the ball and not bother him.
To have that sort of mentality of just always being the match winner and maybe be nothing else.
Nothing else. Couldn't care less. I've never seen a player like that before. You know?
Yeah.
And I know from playing, I was a different, I've been, I played in a midfield player, as a midfield player, and it was different altogether because you're a midfield spot. But if I went 5 minutes, 6 minutes, 7 minutes without touching the ball, I said, something there's something really wrong here. And even other players, I played with Dennis Law, who didn't kill himself, but Dennis Law would get involved in the game. Ronaldo, for 50 minutes, can go without getting bothered in the game at all, because he knows he's got a couple of goals, he's going to be the star. And what's happened, obviously, with his Real Madrid teammates, they're prepared to live with that, because they know him well enough that he is going to score the two goals.
What about somebody like, and you talk about him a lot, someone like Jimmy Greaves, who was such an unbelievable goal scorer? Was he obsessed with scoring goals and nothing else, or was there other parts to his game?
No, Jimmy. I'd say Jimmy would. Yeah, he wasn't like Ronaldo. He would get in the game. He wouldn't get in the game a lot, but he would get in the game because I think Jimmy felt he had an obligation to his teammates to do something. He wasn't a great grafter, but he would do a lot more off the ball than Ronaldo would do. And Jimmy had a funny attitude. I didn't know Jimmy Greaves very well, but watching him play, I always thought Jimmy was easy come, easy go about the game. And it was one of the attributes, actually an attribute, because what goal scorers have to stay calm all the time. And if you get a good goal scorer, who misses a good chance, it can play in their mind.
Yeah.
Right? Jimmy was, some you win, some you lose. So he's always relaxed when he played. I don't think Jimmy went out with the lads after and started talking about football or that. Apparently Jimmy loved tennis.
Okay.
Right. He was a genius at the football pitch, but he wasn't a guy that was going to say, well, this is what we're going to do, or this is what we do. He just did it. But he was gifted. He was quick, good control, great goal scorer. But he had it. I'll give you a perfect example of it. I played with two goal scorers at Leeds, Mick Jones and Alan Clark, right? And Mick was a lovely lad and a very sensitive lad, right? If Mick missed a chance and he said, come on, Mick, right? He'd blush.
Right.
Right? And he'd probably miss... good chance of missing the next one. Now, I played with Alan Clark, who was an arrogant so-and-so. If Alan Clark missed the chance, and he said, come on, Alan, tell you to F off. Would he get the next one?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? There's an arrogance about them, and Jimmy's wasn't an arrogance. Jimmy, I think, wasn't a great lover of the game. It didn't mean that much to him, which became an attribute. You know, Dave McKay played in the same great sports, who was a killer. All over the pitch, he'd want to win and he'd be in, and he was a great player. He was a midfield player. Jimmy was, you know, some you win, some you lose. I remember playing against Jimmy one time, and Jimmy wasn't a good tackler, and Jimmy and I went into a tackle, and he won the ball, and the referee gave a free kick against him. And he said, no, referee, he says, it's the first tackle I've won all year. He's like, he wasn't noted for it.
Yeah.
But the Spurs lads would live with him. You know what I mean? Like, he wasn't a grafter, but they knew.
When the moment came, he'd deliver.
He'd deliver for you. And Ronaldo is like that to a much greater extent. He really doesn't care at all about his teammates. But his teammates know, we'll live with this guy, because he's going to score. Like last week, you know, if you look at it, I watched them, was it today they played Portugal? Was it today?
Played yesterday, yeah.
Yesterday. And I watched them a few times where he'd lose the ball. Couldn't care less. But his teammates accept him. You know, he scored a goal early on, you know, and he could maybe got one or two more, because when he has a chance, I know I'm repeating myself, when he has a chance in the game, say the right winger's gone and there's an opportunity that he can score a goal, he becomes a genius.
Mm.
Absolute genius. He takes the right positions up. He's a good, great header of the ball. He can score with both feet. He becomes an absolute genius at scoring goals.
That Spain-Portugal game was the standout of the tournament so far, it seemed. And it was hard to analyse afterwards, because so much of the talk was about Ronaldo and his brilliance in scoring the hat-trick. This time last week, we were wondering how Spain would respond to the late change in manager. What was your assessment of their two performances, the 3-3 draw and then the 1-1 draw yesterday evening, or the 1-0 win yesterday evening?
I thought the first match, Nathan, where they came back really well. And now I heard a lot of people talking afterwards how they kept the ball. I think when they got to 3-2 in front, they should have gone for it. Get the game over. They played it round on it. But I'm not being wise out. I thought, you shouldn't be doing that. It's only one goal in it, and especially with Ronaldo around, there's always a possibility of this happening. Kill them off, because they had to kill them off. But they started playing around just for the sake of it. In other words, wasting time. We're going to keep the ball until the end of the match, and that's always doubtful, especially with Ronaldo in the opposition. I honestly felt when they were going for it, go for it.
So Portugal in those last 10 minutes, when they're 3-2 down, automatically you're going to throw everything at Spain. So there's going to be heaps of space in behind. That's where you put the ball. That's where you try and play the game.
You kill them off. There's only one way to kill the team off, and that's scoring more goals than them. And if they got a fourth goal, right, I could understand then, okay, we played around a little because you've got to, but when there's only one in it, Nathan, and even when you get to four, I honestly believe, I mightn't have believed when I was a player, now, go for it. Be positive. Keep going for it. If you got them, you had them by the neck, you know, then you have to choke them. But they played it round, and then gave a silly free kick away, as we saw. PK gave a very silly free kick. But with Ronaldo around like that, I mean, everybody before the free kick was taken, think, this guy's got it. It was, I mean, one of the best free kicks I've ever seen in my life. But you know, this could happen, right? So when they had them, when they had to do it, Spain, when they had to come back, and they come back really well, then they started playing it round. Now, I heard people out there saying, well, Spain were great because they held on to the ball. I didn't think it was the right thing to do, to be quite honest.
It's so hard to tell what's going on inside the Spanish camp and what effect the change of managers had. But is that maybe an insight into the effect it can have, that somebody like Hierro comes in last minute, if they go gung-ho and try and push for a fourth goal? A lot of people think, well, what is this guy doing? Clearly, the obvious thing when you're 3-2 up in your first game is you sit in, you keep hold of the ball.
I don't think he had an influence in it. You know, he wouldn't have had an influence on the game anyway, because he wouldn't be there long enough, Nathan. It was just, that's what the lads do. Now, it would have been difficult for him to get a message on to say, look, now what do you do it after the match? He would say, listen, lads, if we are in that position, I don't want you to do that. That's what a manager, he didn't have time. He didn't have time to influence what happened on the pitch. That was the players doing it themselves. But I'd say if any manager would get them in the dressing room and say, okay, lads, that's okay. We lost the goal on it. But in future, if we get into that position, I want us to really go for it and kill the team off.
53106 is the text number, live on all our social channels as well, so you can leave a comment. Jion is live with us in studio till 8 o'clock, and he'll be back again on the football show to reflect on Argentina against Croatia. Just gone half time in that game, and it is still scoreless. There's a lot more we want to talk about, Germany and their struggle so far, England and their performance as well, but we'll take a quick break.
Football on Off the Ball.
Brought to you by the Boyle Sports app. Cash out and in-play betting available in the App Store and Google Play Store.
Welcome back to Thursday's Off the Ball. John Giles is still in studio. 53106 for any of your texts. It is scoreless at halftime between Argentina and Croatia. So we might talk about England. They got their opening night win just about. Harry Kane delivered in the end. Overall, was it a promising start? Was there signs of potential that England could do something in this tournament?
I didn't think so, Nathan. They deserve to win the match. There's no doubt about that. Kane did well, and they won it in the end, and could have had it over early on in the game. But what I found strange about it was, first of all, the team selection. He played with one midfield player. Well, the midfield player, which was Henderson. The rest was Dele Alli, Lingard, Sterling. And when I watched the way they were playing, Nathan, Henderson was the only one in the middle of the field. All the other players were in front of him. They weren't midfield players. Lingard's not a midfield player. Sterling's not a midfield player. Dele Alli's not really a midfield player, you know? So anytime I saw Henderson on the ball, these players were in front of him. Now, it can work because when the opposition had the ball, they were on top of them. But in my opinion, if they play a team, one of the top teams, that get past the front five, as it were, they're going to kill them. And what wasn't good about it, in my opinion, he's been in the job for 2 years, Nathan. Now, over the 2 years, you're preparing your team. In other words, you have a squad of players, you don't know what they can do, so what you have to do is establish as quickly as you can, it might be 5 matches, 6 matches, 7 matches, what's my best team, right? And once you come to that conclusion, that's my best team, you play them as often as you can, because you're always learning from match to match to match to match. Now, that doesn't mean you exclude the other players. In other words, if he's telling the right back this is what he wants him to do, the lad who could come in from is also learning that. So when he comes in,
he knows
what to do. That's called preparation, right? That's you have to make as much common sense as you possibly can.
Yeah.
You gather your quality players, you come to the conclusion, there's my best team, as quickly as you possibly can, you play them as often as you can, and you get the other lads to do, when they come in, this is what I want you to do as well. Right. Now, from what I can see, in the first competitive match that he's had since he's taken over, that team never played together before. Did you? No.
I don't think a month ago anyone expected that to be the team. Exactly. That it would be such an attacking team.
But it's after 2 years, right? When you've gone into the first competitive match, first of all, that's your team. That's your best players in the best positions, and you work on that. Every match you play, you put that right, you put that right, you put that right. When you go into the first competitive match, nobody could know what's going to happen. You just don't know. If the team, it's only common sense. If the team had never played together before, and you hadn't seen them playing, how would you know what they're going to do? You're on a wing and a prayer, right? That team should be established. The players should be established in that. That didn't happen. Now, they deserved to win the match. Only the opposition was all that good. And it went very, very close, as we know, because they made a really good start to the game. And luckily enough, the team against them was the worst team I've ever seen for set pieces. You know, they were worst. But they got away with it in the end. I mean, they could have easily dropped it to Harry Kane did well. But what is he going to do for the next match? Is he going to say, OK, the tactics for the next match are going to be completely different to that? That can happen. But I've never seen the sense in that, Nathan. Because once you change the team for the next match, you don't know how they're going to do.
The expectation seems to be that he's going to stick, by and large, with the same formation, that Dele Alli is injured, so Loftus-Cheek will come in, and that he may drop Sterling and bring Rashford into the side.
Yeah.
But it does mean that it'll still be Jordan Henderson. At this time last week, we were talking about England and the lack of options they had in midfield with Henderson and Dyer, and maybe nobody who can sort of transition the ball, that you're two defensive-minded players. Yeah. Is that perhaps the reason why he went with it, that actually looked at his options, sees he has quite a bit of depth in terms of attacking players and creative players, and looked at midfield and thought Henderson and Dyer, much of a muchness, why have two of them when, listen, hope that one of them can do the job?
I agree with what you're saying, Nathan, but he picked the squad, right?
Were there players there that out that could have been that type of player?
Yeah, well, there'll be certain midfield players that he left out, like Wilshere, for example, who would be a midfield player. Oh, no, he has injuries and all the various things, and there'll be one or two other midfield players. They wouldn't be the best in the world because they don't have any great midfield players, but they are midfield players. Now, if you pick Rashford and Sterling, and you know they're not midfield players, and you're not going to be able to play them all. Vardy didn't play the other night, for example. I think, in my opinion, should be in the team. But he picked that squad. So you have to pick a balanced squad. Like, if you don't pick a balanced squad, then you're at the position that you're saying to me, well, he doesn't have the players to play. But he's not going to be able to play. See, he's fitting in Rashford and all these, Lingard and all these players. He's fitting them in. But he's overloaded with them. He has to be. Because you can only play like two lads up front. But if you're going, if that's his idea and you're going to play without a midfield, I can't see that being good, Nathan. And certainly, he hasn't done it. He's had that squad for a while. But I've never seen England play like that before. Have you?
No.
Never. So you don't know what, like, this is 2 years in the job. When you're gone 2 years in the job, what I'm saying is 2 years in the job and you're playing your first competitive match, you should know, whatever players I have at my disposal, these are the best that I can do, and get to that conclusion early on and play them as often as you possibly can. That's preparation. That's what you have the 2 years for. Now, if you're going into the first match with a team that has never played together before in that particular way, you don't know what's going to happen, Nathan. How could you know if it's the first time that you do it?
A lot of the enthusiasm around their performance seems to be built on the first 20 minutes when all those attacking players did seem to click and there was a real there was a real good energy and a good pace.
Yes.
And then it felt as though they got sloppy and maybe Tunisia started to work them out a bit. But was there enough in the first 20 minutes to suggest that...
Well, 20 minutes is 20 minutes, Nathan. What about the 70 minutes?
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? What you're looking for is a balanced players. Okay. They should have scored early on, but they didn't, right? And they were from set pieces, actually, most of the chances. Okay, that can happen. And there can be a plus to it, especially if you're playing an inferior team, that the players are already up there to get tight on them when they have the ball, right?
Right.
But my fear is when you play against a better team and they have the players to get past those five players, then you've nothing.
Don't have the bodies back.
It's a balance. There has to be a balance to every team that you play. The back players do their stuff, the midfield players do that, and the forwards do their stuff, and they act as a team. as a team together. You get back at the right time, you get forward at the right time. That's called a balance to it. But I keep going back to the principle. Going into the first match, first competitive match after 2 years, you do not know what's going to happen. You should know, Nathan. In other words, you should have a good idea. We've drilled them for that. They're my best players. They've played 8 matches together. The other lads who are not in the team have come in. They know what to do when they do come in. Mm. That's preparation. That's what's called preparation. That's why you have the time and the friendly matches to do that. But if you go like last night, first competitive match, I couldn't believe it when I saw it. Henderson was the only established midfield player. And Lingard and the other lads didn't actually play in midfield. They were ahead of Henderson all the time. Now, they made a good start because they could get them, and they weren't playing the best team in the world either. And they were terrible for corner kicks and free kicks. And they could have had the game finished. But they got other situations against him where they could have had it finished, and they don't. But then there's a balance to it.
Yeah.
After that.
You'd wonder, will they get a little
bit more? They struggled after that, Nathan, to create chances. I mean, it was only free kicks in the second half, or the last, say, 60 minutes of the game. They didn't actually create anything after that because it's unbalanced. And luckily enough, from the corner kick, I mean, the defender was terrible. There was somebody marking Kane. I mean, we can't show it on what we're doing. But the fellow was marking Kane. And when the ball was half cleared, he went running out and left Kane on his own. You know, This wasn't a good team that they played against. But a very, very promising start in the way that they did it, because with the team that they played against, doing what he did actually worked, because the forward player was already there. And they did put them under pressure. But I think when you're playing against a lesser team, but the principle is still there. This should be a prepared team, knowing exactly what they're going to do, and he should know what to expect from going into the first competitive match.
Yeah, and they'll probably get a bit more confidence on Sunday when they play Panama, and the day of reckoning is, I think, this day next week when they take on Belgium, and they lose that, and maybe they're back to square one,
well, this
and
there's
a total overhaul again.
Let's put it this way, Nathan. If that's the way to do it,
right,
then there'll be no such thing as preparation. There'll be no such thing as having the 2 years to build up to the first game where you know the players, you know what they can do, they know what they can't do. These are the best players. And you talk about formation, everything is formation, but a balance at the back, a balance in midfield, and a balance up front. That's only common sense. But there was certainly no balance in midfield yesterday because Henderson was only on his own.
Yeah.
Lingard didn't play in midfield. Dele Alli didn't play in midfield. Sterling didn't play in midfield. They just didn't because they were ahead of the ball all the time. Now, if that's the right way to do it, then he should have been doing it ages ago, so as he know that is the right way to do it. I believe, that's the best way to do it. But if he's gone to the match last night, he couldn't possibly know how that was going to work out because he'd never seen it before. He might have done it in practice, but that's a different thing altogether.
We have to leave it there for now, John. You're going to stick around. You're going to watch the second half of Argentina-Croatia, which is still scoreless, but a huge 45 minutes coming up for Argentina and for Lionel Messi. And you're going to join us again on the football show at 9 o'clock, so you can keep your text coming
okay.
in to 53106. Thanks a lot, John.
Football on Off the Ball.
Brought to you by the Boyle Sports app. Cash out and in-play betting available in the App Store and Google Play Store.
You're very welcome along to Thursday night's football show. Nathan with you through till 10 o'clock. 53106 is the text number. We are live on all our social channels as well, so you can leave a comment on Facebook, on YouTube, or on Periscope. And we have a special treat for you tonight on the football show because John Giles has hung around. You decided to stay on and watch Argentina against Croatia. We're very grateful that you hung on.
No bother, Nathan.
And as luck would have it, we've probably spent more time over the last year talking about Luka Modric than any other player. And boy, did he step up tonight. Croatia 3, Argentina 0.
Yeah, it was an amazing game, as most people have watched it, Nathan. It looked like it was going to be maybe a dull, scoreless draw until the goalkeeper.
For anyone who hasn't seen the first goal, so it was just it was a back pass. And initially, when I saw it, I thought he was just trying to clearance and he sliced it. But actually, Willy Caballero was trying to be a bit too smart for his own good and lob it over the defender and made a ball.
Over the defender. It's sort of madness now in the goalkeeping situation, Nathan. There's no doubt about that. I know managers are encouraged them to play it out from the back, which is good. But you have to pick the right time to do it and to try and produce a delicate chip over the forward's head is not the way to do it. And I must say that, to be fair to Croatia, they took full advantage of it and finished up really, really well and were well worthy winners, having played really well after that particular incident.
And it looked as though they were tested in many ways. It felt like a bit of an old school Italian 90 style battle where there were challenges flying in. There were a few scraps here and there. They were up for that.
Yeah.
And they seemed to have that little bit of extra class as well.
Yeah, they were very impressive tonight. And I think they've been promising for years to do certain things, Croatia, and have disappointed. But definitely tonight. Actually, that's the best display I've seen in this competition so far.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah, by a long way. They were good at the back. We had Modric, of course, playing in midfield. And they attacked when they could. They defended well, scored the goals. Now, I thought they were very, very impressive tonight, led again by Modric.
So Modric's role with Croatia, is it the exact same as what he does with Real Madrid?
I think so. Actually, in Madrid in late, the last couple of matches season in the Champions League final and that, he seemed to be pushed out to the right side more than... And for a player of Modric's ability, you can't restrict him to one side. Right, and if you're taught to play on the right hand, they have to wait for somebody to give you the ball. What's Modric's great strength is that he gets the ball to everybody because he's the freedom to go to the left side, to go to the right side, and that's his natural game. And he's the best in the world at it at the moment by a long way. And a lot of it's got to do with his technical ability, but also his attitude. He's a great lad. I think he's a great lad. I love him. I love Modric as a player.
Mm.
He's like, even tonight, before they got on top, he was doing the dirty work, as they call it now in the game, winning tackles in that and contributing that way. Whereas you get most players with his ability, their main contribution is on the ball. And that's it. If they're not on the ball, then they're not playing. He was brilliant tonight. And then when they did get on top, then he came into his own, and what his natural game is to link it up, scored a great goal at a good time. And... He was brilliant, and he always is. I mean, he gives out. He's a real pro, plays for the team, does all the things that you want players to do. And he's got a good reward, and could lead them on now to really, really great things in this particular competition.
It's interesting to say that he gets involved in the dirty stuff, the hard stuff as well, and maybe that is what takes him a step above any other midfielder, because for somebody of his technical ability, he'd probably get away with being a fancy number 10.
Yeah, oh, yeah. Well, that happens in the game. Mm. You know, you could say, well, you play. Say you take Wilshere of Arsenal. Like, on his day, doing certain things, he's very, very good. But sometimes it's not his day, and he doesn't have another string to his bow, as it were, to do stuff that, like in a game like tonight, there wasn't much room in the game tonight. And as you said, with Modric, you'd expect him to be getting on the ball and doing certain things. He wasn't able to do that tonight. It was too crowded and it was too rough. But he matched rough for rough tonight. And then when the game got a little bit easier, when they scored the two goals, he was able then to come into the game to really show what he could do in a constructive way. And that's the ideal midfield player, because every game you're not going to have it easy. You're not going to be able to get on the ball. You just have to mix it. And certainly tonight in a big game for Croatia, he did it and did it brilliantly.
You would think, actually, we're probably too soft in general on creative midfielders and don't expect enough from them in their overall game, because surely if you have the talent and the awareness to pick out pockets of space on the pitch in an attacking sense, you should have that awareness in a defensive sense as well, that you know where the ball is going, you know where you can pop up to block a pass.
They might have other players that are not doing it much. They have the awareness, but they don't have the heart to do it, if you call it a heart to do it. In other words, I'm in the team to do this and get on the ball. I'm not really prepared to do anything else. Mm. And of course, it's 50% of the game, Nathan, as we know, because you're not going to have the ball all the time and you're not going to get space and to use your creative abilities. So that's what makes Modric great, because he can do both when it's needed at any particular time in any particular game, because he has the heart to do it and he has the will to do it, and he's playing for the team all the time.
So as Croatia progress in this tournament, and they are guaranteed a spot now in the last 16, and you say watching that, as it rolls on, they could end up playing Spain, but they look as though they could be a match for anybody, and opposition teams start wondering how you counter Croatia. How do you stop Modric? How do you stop him controlling a game?
Well, what they'll do, obviously, get a man-to-man marking on it. That's when you really come into your own, or try to come into your own as a midfield player, Nathan. there's definitely get the man-to-man marking, You know, like, again, I'll just give you an example. Do you remember Glenn Hoddle playing, for example? But Glenn Hoddle was a terrific player for Spurs, terrific player for England. And I played against him, actually, at the time. But he didn't have any pace, right? And if your man marked him, you could put him out of the game easy enough. So what used to happen with Glenn Hoddle, if he was one mark for three or four games, he'd go out of it. And then people would stop man marking him. So he'd have another run of four or five games where he could do what he liked. And then people said, oh, we better start marking Glenn Hoddle. But when he was actually man marked, he couldn't get away from it.
Was that simply pace? He just didn't have that extra level?
He was a very classy player. He was distribute the ball well. And it's all about time and space on the pitch. And so when he had the time and space, he could distribute it brilliantly. But if he gave him away with it, he couldn't make space for himself. He was a very, very good player.
Yeah, he's probably an incredibly divisive player from that era, though, and that people reflect 30 years on and say he was one of the finest players of his generation, or actually he was a bit fancy at times, but there was no great substance.
Exactly. I think when he finished his career, I think the general consensus was he didn't really fulfil what he had, you know, because he could be brilliant and then you wouldn't see him. And when he was at his best, actually, is when he got Ozzie Ardiles. He was a terrific player. He was doing all that stuff, and Glenn Hoddle was an extra. You know, and he could cope with that.
Right.
Actually, it was our dealers would be man marked, instead of him. But that's the way it was. But with Modric now, I think Modric has been man marked. Now he hasn't been man marked in this competition, or lately in Croatia, because Croatia haven't been doing all that well. But now that they're contenders, you'll see in the next match, I think somebody will be man marking him. Now it's another game that he has to get over, if that's the right word, to do what's needed to be done. I think he can. I mean, there's a way of doing it, Nathan. You know, and I think he'd be brainy enough to lose the marker, but it won't be easy. It won't be easy for him.
Is there another way? Do you basically trust, as you say, his footballing brain that he figures this out in 5 or 10 minutes if he's being man marked, whether he can actually take on the man marker, or at times do you have to go, I'm going to sacrifice my own game here. I'm going to draw this guy out. I'm going to take somebody out of it. I'll keep it very simple and I'll trust the players around me.
They've won that.
Okay.
If you do that,
if you have to alter your game,
well, the guy that's doing the man marking, from his manager's point of view, he'll say to the man, I don't care if you don't even kick the ball, I don't care if you never get a kick at the ball, as long as you stop that guy from doing what he wants to do. So if you take a position where, right, I'm going to take him out of the way, that's exactly what he wants, that's what the opposition wants. You have to be able to do it. If you have enough good players around you, Nathan, you can do it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
And it's so easier if we're chatting about Madrid,
it. There's a way of doing it, actually, and I try to explain it. It's not easy without a picture. The man's man marking you, okay? So what you do, say your player is on the ball. You go behind you're playing that way, you go behind your player. Now, again, it's common sense. If this guy follows you, he's leaving a big space behind him. So all you've got to do is run around the back of him and you're through. So now he has to give you 8 to 10 yards.
Right.
Right? And if he follows you, right, if you can get a picture of this, and your player is on the ball, if you come back and come around the back of your player and he follows you, he's coming out behind you.
Okay, so either way you're creating some space.
Yeah, so he has to stay and give you the 8 to 10 yards. Now, a player of Modric's ability, or anybody with real ability, 8 to 10 yards is enough to do what needs to be done.
Yeah.
Right. That's the best, that I found anyway, I used to be a man marked of it, that was the best way of doing it. And I don't want to sound too technical, but there is a way around it. Now, remember Hazard was being man marked there with Herrera.
Yeah, but...
And what they said, he went out on the wing, you know? And what happened actually with Hazard, he did the opposite of what he should have done. He went further forward, right? Now, if you go further forward ahead of the ball, it means you got your back to where you want to be, instead of coming back around the ball. So there is.
You want to keep trying to get involved.
Yeah, don't get ahead of the ball. Come around the back of the ball.
Right.
And then you can. That's, I found, the best way to lose the man marker.
Who were the toughest man markers you faced? Who was the one
Peter
guy that...
Peter Storey, I think.
What used he do that wound you up?
Peter was an animal. he never said a word on the pitch, but he was good at it.
Right.
He was good at man marking. He wouldn't care if he never got a kick at the ball, as long as he got a kick on you.
Right, so just nibbling at your ankles.
But he was good at it, you know. So, well, you know, that was the game. But yeah, you have to match Like in my case, you have to match the man marker, right? You have to make his life hell if he gets anywhere near the ball. You know what I mean?
Okay, so
you're going to give him more than he's going to give you, in terms of the physical stuff.
Yeah.
That's part of the game, because like there was a couple of players in my generation, and say, well, you get stuck into him, and you pack it in, you know, and you can't afford to do that.
We should mention as well that Luka Modric scored a fabulous goal.
Great goal.
What was he, 25 yards out onto the right foot? Incredible power to get it past Caballero. Yeah,
he was brilliant. He was, as I said before, I love him as a player because he gives everything for the team. He's a terrific player. He scores a goal now and again. But again, working all the time. This wasn't an easy match to play in tonight for either side because they were closing each other down. But he came through that hard part, making as many tackles as some of the players who didn't have his ability, and then when they got on top, to use the ability better than anybody else. So I'd say it was a perfect game as a midfield player for Modric to do what he did, and also had the benefit and bonus of scoring a terrific goal.
Mm. Lionel Messi then, you mentioned that you felt he played quite well against Iceland. I think he'd 11 shots, he was creating opportunities in that game. Tonight he didn't have a single shot on goal. Was he a peripheral figure? Did he manage to get involved in the game, dictate things at any stage?
I think he packed it in tonight.
Really?
Yeah. I think, now we don't know the position with the manager, but the manager took Aguero off at a very early stage. Now, Aguero's the type of player you have to live with, because he's going to score your spectacular goals. And I think it's heartbreaking for Aguero because he's not in the game. But there's lots of games he wasn't in, he's going to score your goal. And I think Messi saw this. Now, I wouldn't be surprised. There's a big row in the dressing room tonight. Where Messi, you know, if he's that type of lad, going to say to the manager, and one or two of you, what were you doing? What are you doing? You know? All to do is keep playing. It was no score when he was taken off. And he's one of the best goal scorers in the world. Mm. You don't just take somebody off because he's not doing it in a tight game. But like Aguero, as you know, can score your goal at any time in any given game. And you're taking that threat off. And I think when Messi saw that, I think, oh, this is rubbish. I'm only giving you my take on it. And I'd say there's a huge row in the dressing room after that particular match.
Surely though, when so much of your reputation, it seems, is at stake on having a World Cup and people want to define your greatness on what you can do with your country and the comparisons to Maradona, that when the going gets tough, you don't pack it in.
Well, when I say pack it in, I think he got disheartened. Well, the same as packing it in. But there again, I don't think his reputation, I don't think it's fair on him for his reputation to be challenged in a way in a World Cup every 4 years, because Maradona won the World Cup and he didn't. If you look at all the great games he's playing, winning the European Championship, I mean, a World Cup only comes around once every four years. And he, to be fair, he hasn't been playing with players that Maradona played with. So I don't judge Messi at all on his performances in the World Cup or not winning the World Cup. He's one of the greatest players of all time, whether he wins a World Cup or not. You know, I think
he was player of the tournament 4 years ago. It was an incredibly tight final against Germany. One of the strikers take a chance. Does that ultimately define how we look at Lionel Messi?
Yeah, well, that's what I say. Like, he's been doing it for whatever he's been doing, 10 or 12 years.
Mm.
Brilliant at the top of his profession in the Champions League, where he's won a few times, and the things that we've seen him do. He can't be judged on a World Cup. Playing with a mediocre team, you would have to say, Argentina, have turned out, like tonight and tonight's performance, and in other years, not to be the best in the world. And I think he was last night. Maybe he did pack it in, and that might be a bit unfair on him. But I think he would certainly got disheartened. I'd say he got disheartened, and I'm only giving you my take on it. Might not. That I wouldn't be surprised if there was a row after the match with the manager, doing what he did with Aguero.
It looks as though that, even though Sampaoli is relatively new into the job and he had a lot of success with Chile during his time there, but he hasn't been able to somehow bring the group together and even get a solidity, get some sort of a base that you can let Messi work his magic. It just seems to be a mess all over the pitch that nobody seems to know what they're doing.
But to be fair to him as well, Nathan, I don't think he has the players. You know, I don't think Argentina actually have the players that's needed to go and win a World Cup. Now, he might take some of the blame for doing some of the things he did, but if you look at the players individually, you know, like, they don't have that many great players.
All the more surprising then they take Aguero off.
Exactly. I mean, Aguero is the type of player, and we all know him from playing with Manchester City, and I think Guardiola lost a bit of confidence at some stage. But he's the type of player you have to live with. You know, he's not. Sometimes the strikers, Liam, they don't get a kick at the ball for 20 minutes. But you know he's capable of doing it. If he's given the service, and to be fair to him, he wasn't given. But if he's not contributing scoring goals, Aguero, he's not contributing much at all. But you have to live with that. You know, I think Guardiola found that out. Guardiola wants them chasing there. And then he brought him back in the team. And he's scoring goal after goal after goal. We've seen that. That's what happens with goal, a lot of goal scorers.
Argentina aren't out of it just yet, but it is out of their hands. So Croatia are through to the last 16. They're on 6 points. Argentina and Iceland are both on 1 point. So we're going to get the Icelandic perspective in a few minutes' time. Iceland play Nigeria tomorrow. Realistically, Argentina want to draw between Iceland and Nigeria, and they might have some sort of control over what might happen heading into the last game, but it does look as though they're in serious trouble. Before we wrap up then on your initial thoughts of the first week or so, Germany losing to Mexico ahead of Argentina was the big shock. Germany went into this tournament as favourites, largely I think because they were so solid. Yogi Löw, their manager, has been there for heading up in a decade at this stage. There's continuity. They have that thing that a lot of people want where they seem to know what their best 11 is. But there was just, they just fell flat. Why do you think it was so flat against Mexico?
I don't think they have the players again, Nathan. I think, like we talked to Didi Hamann last week, for example, and he didn't fancy Germany at all. And if you look at the Champions League, it's a good guide to the teams. I mean, the German teams got beaten in the semi-final, but they had a lot of foreign players playing for them. So I don't think they actually have the players. I mean, I think they'd be made favourites on their previous records, which has been great. Also, all the Germans always come good, and they might still come good, but I don't think they have the players this year to do it, Nathan. I think Spain have looked, you know, after the first match against Portugal, the most promising of the teams that we expected to do well. I don't think any of them, what we would regard as the big teams, have come up with the goods at all. I mean, I think that the Croatians' performance tonight has been the best performance so far. Now, whether they can maintain that or not, but you know, Germany have been a disappointment. England, we talked about early on, we don't know whether they can do it or not. Spain.
What about France?
I think France would be a huge disappointment.
Even with the two wins?
Yeah.
No signs that they're making progress.
I didn't see anything great about them. I thought they'd been. I thought they had a lot of good young players. One of the tips beforehand, but what I've seen, I wouldn't be too keen on them at all.
Is that again?
I think Spain can get better.
Okay.
I think Spain can definitely get better, and you know they have the players. I think they've shown them, but none of the other teams that we fancied. Who was the other one? Brazil. Hugely disappointing. Brazil. And we've only seen him in the one match.
There was a touch of England in that for the first 20-25 minutes. They looked as though they were really going to kick on, and they were the real deal. But again, for whatever reason,
I didn't even fancy them in the first 25 minutes, Nathan. And like Neymar was the main man, supposed to be his main man. But the first touch of the ball that Neymar got, he was in a tight situation, and there was a simple ball onto one of his colleagues, started doing a flick and a. And never a good sign. In other words, he's going out there to show off. What Brazil reminded me of, they reminded me of a team that had already won the World Cup and were going to show everybody how good they were. They were totally lost in what they were. And Neymar led, now I know he's injured or maybe injured, but he led the way. In other words, he was going to show a few tricks, instead of getting on with the real job of winning the match. I was very disappointed in Brazil.
So is a lot of what Brazil do then based upon what happens in the dressing room with their manager Chichi and whether he can somehow gain control of Neymar and get him fully focused on, well, if we win the World Cup, you can spend the next 10 years doing all your tricks?
Yeah, but you would expect that to be done anyway. Mm. Now, again, he's been the manager of the team for about the last couple of years. I mean, going out with the right attitude is a gimme, you know. That's how you start. You know, he shouldn't have to come in at halftime and say, what's going on? Like, he's the manager, and going out to the first competitor, show him what you can do. That shouldn't happen, which is a bad sign from the manager's point of view as well.
John, great stuff. Thanks a lot for hanging on.
No bother, Nathan.
Your analysis.
Thank you.
On the match. Luka Modric rewarded your patience. You'll be back next Thursday evening, 7:30 again. Great stuff. We're going to take a quick break and then We're going to see what life is like in Iceland right now.
Football on Off the Ball.
Brought to you by the Boyle Sports app. Cash out and in-play betting available in the App Store and Google Play Store.
Well, Iceland may have thought it wouldn't get any better than knocking England out of Euro 2016. Well, it may get better this month because the result tonight between Croatia and Argentina, Croatia's 3-0 win, means Iceland, who face Nigeria tomorrow, could well be heading for the last 16 of the World Cup Finals, the smallest country to ever play in a World Cup Finals. And they started with that 1-1 draw against Argentina last weekend. Delighted to be joined on the line by Kolbjørn Tumi, sports and news editor with Vizier, a leading news and entertainment website in Iceland, and a contributor who joined us during that Euro 2016 run. He's on Skype. He's in the fan zone. I think, where in the world are you, Kolbjørn?
Hey guys, I'm in Volgograd. I was just back from the fan zone watching Croatia slaughter Argentina and putting us in a very good position.
Yeah, you don't want to get too far ahead of yourselves, but you can start dreaming of the last 16 perhaps, if you can go and beat Nigeria tomorrow. What are the confidence levels like in the Icelandic camp?
Well, before the World Cup, this was definitely the game that we thought this would be the big chance of getting 3 points to see us through, which is obviously the aim of every player on the team. So Argentina, Croatia, obviously two of the greatest nations in the world in football at the moment, although Argentina didn't look at their best tonight. So I guess a young Nigerian team with, they've had their problems in the past few years, and it didn't look great against Croatia, although it didn't look terrible. So I think the guys are very confident that this is their chance to shine and take us to the next level.
For anybody who hasn't been following Iceland since Euro 2016 and since their exit to France in that competition, qualification campaign and heading into this tournament, is it still very much the same game plan, same management, same players?
Well, what happened is in 2012, we got in Lars Lagerbäck, a coach from Sweden, who got this golden generation to perform. We made the playoffs for the 2014 World Cup, and then we made the Euros, and then Lars stepped aside, and his assistant and then co-coach, Heimir Hallgrímsson. People were very worried if he had what it took to get everybody on board and see this through. And we had a really tough group with the qualifying for this World Cup. With really strong teams, among them Croatia, and we managed to win the group, which is a really unbelievable achievement, I feel. So we've definitely taken a step forward since Lars left us, and we've grown, we've learned from games, we learned from, I don't know if you remember, but in the playoffs for the 2014 World Cup, we played Croatia we drew 0-0 in Reykjavik, and then we went to Zagreb. And since then, a chance, lost 2-0, learned a lot from that. Then we went to the Euros and did very well, as probably everybody remembers, with the Viking clap and England going out. But then we were destroyed against France when their simple game plan was, okay, we'll let you have the ball and see what you can do with the ball. And we flopped in that game. We were 4-0 down at halftime and never stood a chance. But it seems like this team grows. They learn from their mistakes, like the game in Croatia and Zagreb, the game in France 2 years ago. So this is a big, big occasion. The occasion was big in Moscow a week ago, but this is a big occasion tomorrow. Nigeria, it's all or nothing for them. They have to win if they want to stand a chance, and we feel the same way for us. We need 3 points, and we feel pretty confident, although we're missing one star player, Johan Berg Guðmundsson, who plays for Burnley in the Premiership. That's a big blow to us, but we hope the best.
This is probably a very different situation then for Icelandic players in the history of Icelandic football, in that they're going into a game at a major finals and there's expectation, there's a huge amount of expectation that Iceland, with the experience of Euro 2016, should actually be able to go and do a job on Nigeria, should be able to go and beat this young Nigerian side. So that's another challenge, I guess, for the management to keep that on track and keep the players' minds focused and not look at tonight's game and suddenly start dreaming and looking ahead to a last 16 game when it's not there yet.
Well, I think every player on this team knows that they have a big chance that they might not have again. I think they're very focused. Nobody's like taking two steps forward. It's just one game at a time. The draw against Argentina was a fantastic result, and it kind of mimics the result we had in 2016. We drew against the Cristiano Ronaldo Portugal team in the first game, a team that went on to win the Euros. So, well, I got a feeling Argentina isn't going to do the same as Portugal did in 2016, but it gave us a big boost. It was a big step to start the tournament in one of the high-profile games. It wasn't one of the games that was... The two first games that were sold out in the tournament was the final and Argentina-Iceland in Moscow. So we went through that. We saved a penalty from Messi, and it's kind of... We got a good boost with us. We got 2,000 fans traveling here, not 20,000, as the Nigerian coach expects to be in the stadium tomorrow. It was a very funny to witness the press conference today with the Nigerian coach, because he was kind of finding excuses. He was constantly telling us he had a very young team, injuries, only a 19-year-old goalkeeper. And then he mentioned the fact that 20,000 Icelandic fans would probably outnumber the 250 Nigerian fans. I have no idea how many Nigerian fans are there. They don't seem too many, but there's no more than 2,000 or 3,000 Icelandic fans here tomorrow. So he was kind of trying to get himself into the underdog moment before this game, which means everything to both nations.
From being around the squad then in recent years and looking at their development and the confidence that's starting to be built up, was that Argentina performance, was that a step above even what was achieved against England in terms of the control the team had? Like, it seemed as though about 15, 20 minutes into that game that the Icelandic players had the maturity to look around, look at what they were facing and realise, actually, Argentina aren't all that. They don't have great strength in midfield. Defensively, they're a shambles. If we can press these guys at the right time, we can actually cause them some trouble. That this doesn't need to be just containment.
Well, this team just keeps on surprising us. Like, 15 minutes in or something like that, we had an open chance. Birkir Bjarnason, player with Aston Villa in England, scored our first goal in the Euros against Portugal, leveled the game there. He had basically the same chance, even better, against Argentina, and he blew it. And then a moment later, Aguero makes it 1-0. Thousands of Argentinians in great shape, great mood in the stadium, celebrating. They owned the stadium until 22nd minute when we equalized out of nowhere. But it's kind of, it feels embarrassing, because when Argentina scores, you're like, okay, this is it. We're only little Iceland. This is going to be complicated. They've scored their goal and they'll just take this game and control it. But it didn't. We score a goal, a fairly simple goal after a good attack. And after that, there was like, no, we were outnumbered in the stands. But the expectations of Argentina, the fans that have been so loud, like an hour into the game, they were controlling the stadium. They were making this great atmosphere. One goal from Iceland, it just separates everything. And the Icelandic fans kind of took over, and Argentina just never found their game again. And obviously and you should have seen, we were sitting, the Icelandic reporters, really close to the Argentina dugout. And their coach was so stressed. And when they got that penalty, it was like the weight of the shoulders was off him. He was already thinking about, what are we going to do? We're just going to just sit this through. After Messi scores, we're just going to sit this through. And then we make this unbelievable save from from our goalkeeper, which is a story on its own. And Argentina kind of never made a major threat after that. And tonight, watching this game against Croatia, it's just like, you want to cry. It's so sad, because they have so many fans and so much passion, so much talent, but they just don't seem to be able to get that one major title Messi deserves and is still looking for.
Hey, there's no room for sentiment in football. You just got to worry about yourself. Worry about Iceland tomorrow. There's been no change in manager since Euro 2016. Heimir Hallgrímsson remains in place. As a manager, what type of personality is he? Has this been built on a great tactical brain, or is he very much a man manager? What type of personality is he?
He's very human. He will laugh at your jokes, and he can be serious, and he's man on man. And I mean, in Moscow before the Argentina game, he was just there was a press conference the day before. He was just in the stands speaking to some German reporter, and then he'll make jokes in the press conference, and he's just really, he's a very tactical manager, and he's also a really, really good one-on-one person. So, as I said before, we were worried that because we're a tiny nation, before Lars Lagerbäck came over with his experience of taking Sweden and Nigeria to the World Cup, we had had guys who were just, you know, coaches in the Icelandic League, the Pepsi League. You might not have heard of it. And although we have two players in our squad now playing on the Pepsi League, but we needed some experience. So when we lost Lars, we thought, okay, how are players going to deal with this? But our dentist from the island, the Westman Islands, south of Iceland, he seems to have full control. Full. Everybody believes in what he's saying. We've taken a step further. We used to play only 4-4-2. Now we play the 4-5-1 against Argentina. Nobody knows how we're going to play tomorrow against Nigeria. And we're expecting to lose him after this tournament. We're thinking the USA might step in and ask for his help in getting them to another World Cup, which seems to be, which should be just automatic, but they didn't manage to get here this time. So we're expecting to lose him, but he's done a fantastic job.
You're one of the lucky ones, Colby, and you're in Volgograd for tomorrow's game. The reports were that 99.6% of the Icelandic population watched the game against Argentina. What are you hearing from back home? Just how crazy is the country going over all this?
Well, the statistic is of the people that actually watched TV this this Saturday night, June 16th, 99.6% watched that game. So not quite the amount of the population, but still a great amount. Everybody's just psyched. Tomorrow, the game is at 3 p.m. Iceland time, and shops will be closed. People will stop working at probably 2:30, and it's just a moment. It's a historical moment. Like as a kid, I'm 36 years old myself. You know, everybody plays football when they're young, and going to the World Cup was never, ever a realistic dream. And we're still doing it at a 32-team World Cup, not at a 48 or 64 or 128 or wherever it's going to end. So it's just a unique thing for us, and everybody's enjoying every minute.
Hey, we're very, very jealous of your adventure. Enjoy the game tomorrow. It's a 4 o'clock kickoff, Irish time. Colby and Toomey, thanks a lot for joining us.
Thank you, guys.
Colby and Toomey there, sports and news editor with Vizier, a leading news and entertainment website in Iceland. As I say, he's in a fan zone in Volgograd. And anyone who was watching online will just have seen Colbien's name tag, and JP delighted with himself with the strap line. It said, "To me, to you."
Football on Off the Ball.
Brought to you by the Boyle Sports app. Cash out and in-play betting available in the App Store and Google Play Store.